to live righteously. It's time for another episode of the Cultural Hall. It's episode number 223, and we're going to call this porn. So now what?
That's a good one, Richie.
That's a pretty good
title,
right?
Pretty good, yeah.
I am joined by, you really should, you're not a doctor, but you really should do whatever it takes to be the doctor.
I am. I start school next year.
Really?
PhD.
Look at you.
Hola.
Kristen Hudson.
Yes.
You've been on how many times with us?
I've been on a few times.
The real intimacy back in the hundreds, and then you came out and talked about the postpartum.
Yes.
And then you've been on and talked about...
I did articles and news one
time. You did articles and news with us one time.
And I've blogged and stuff.
Yeah. So you can find her. Your website is...
Right now, it's just thehealinggroup.com.
And people, if they want to have therapy sessions with you, they live along the Wasatch Front. Or you guys do stuff online, too, right?
We do. And just even consultations and all
that. Or you'll even answer a question like, hey, this.
Absolutely. We love that.
And then Kristen will be like, well, this. That's how she likes to respond to that. And then also joined by Nate Bagley. When are you going to get the letters after your name, Nate?
That's a great question. I'm applying to grad school right now.
So are you really?
Hopefully 2 years.
Let me ask you guys something. Should I go to grad school? Because all my friends are at that point now and they're going to grad school. I have no idea what I'd go for.
What would you
go
could
just
for?
Come to grad school with me and sit next to me.
Oh, deal.
All right. I'm going to San Francisco for mine if you want to come with me.
Are you really?
Yeah, I am.
Going to move?
No. You fly in once a month.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Is it like University of Phoenix in San Francisco?
No. But kind of.
Yeah.
But not really.
But you still get the PhD?
No.
No.
It's like a real program.
No, I'm not saying it's not a real program. You're going to get a PhD.
I'm watching your face as you're saying this.
Don't. Do not judge my face.
It's a beautiful face.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I love that U2 song. Is it day? It might be day.
It might be day.
But I was picking up what you were putting down.
Beautiful face. No?
Beautiful
face. Well, we learned something already.
Right there.
It's Nate Bagley from your website is...
Loveyoumentory.com is probably the best place to find me.
And he answers questions, too. You can fire a question his way.
And we did a podcast together on this issue.
Yep.
And I think it was
We've
really
done a lot
helpful.
Of things together.
Yeah, we have.
Nate was introduced to me by Kristen.
Yeah.
And then you've been on an episode of the Cultural Hall.
I came
as well.
On, and I'm glad that I'm back. Thanks for inviting me.
Good to have you back. So I want to dive in, and we'll see where this goes, because we sort of were talking off mic about where this would go, and we said, well, we have some ideas as far as this goes. I think that it's a very real thing for people, but we'll assign this members of the church, because of the Cultural Hall nature of this, to be like, hey, so... I just found out that my spouse, because it could be a woman, and also it could be a man, is looking at porn.
Right.
So now what?
Right. And that experience right there, I empathize greatly. Let me put a little context into this, because it could seem like, oh, I'm the sex therapist who has this, but...
She's super liberal and open, and here
right.
she goes. She's going to be able to
but
navigate
let me put
this.
Personal newly married hat Kristen on, which was the two deal breakers. I looked at my husband and I said, look, if I ever catch you with porn or prescription pain pills, it's a deal breaker.
You're like, affairs is fine.
I just, no. But I just laid that pressure on right out of the gate.
Really? That was a conversation
that
you
was
had.
The conversation.
Here are the things that I feel about.
Because I genuinely was really afraid of that because of, I think everyone's had a personal experience with this, whether it was a friend or family member or otherwise. And
or
it's
personally.
All, or personally. Yeah. And to me, it felt like that's a very overwhelming, consuming thing that you can't overcome. And once it's introduced into your life, that's it.
Uh-huh.
That's the perspective I
it
was coming at it with.
It follows you everywhere.
Follows you everywhere. And it's something you'll be wrestling with forevermore.
Give me an idea. How old is just married Kristen?
So that's a good question. I was 26 years old at the time. And now I'm 36. So a decade later, and I have come, as Nate would like to say, I'm 180 on the whole thing, and never in a million years would have thought that I'm here. But it has allowed me to empathize with these women that find porn unexpectedly, and it can be really heartbreaking. So I get that piece.
Before we move on, I feel like it's important to clarify that 180 does not mean you're pro-porn. Because I don't want people turning off the podcast right now going, oh my gosh, this is going to be a pro-porn episode.
No, it's not. That's a good point.
But your outlook towards porn has changed towards one of judgment to one of more compassion and understanding.
Exactly. It's not pro-porn. It's pro wow, this is a lot more complex. There's a lot more nuance, and I have a lot more empathy for all people.
It's not as black and white or as simple as we like. We like to make complex ideas simple, and it's not. This is an issue that is not as simple as we like to make it.
Right.
It really is. For me, statements like, if my spouse ever...
Ultimatums.
Whatever those things are, like, and you see this within the church a lot, and I'm not sure if this is just humanity or if it's the culture of the church or if it's... or what it is, but it's like, if my spouse ever left the church, I wouldn't be able to continue in that relationship.
Right.
If I ever found porn, if I ever, you know, you kind of elaborated on some other ones. It's interesting that we do that because I think most people find themselves in that situation and go, yeah, maybe I'm not so hardlined as I would, or they find themselves very hardlined and miss a great opportunity to be able to grow as a person, to have the depth of their love with their individual grow as they find their way through a problem.
I grossly underestimated that I actually might deeply love my husband. And so those hard lines that I was drawing, it's like, oh, I actually really love you and want to be married to you. So now what? Where does that hard line go? What do I now have to do? What does this look like now?
So let's back up the initial question, right? All right, I'm married, which is a stretch now because I'm divorced. Oh, tears. And I find the porn, right? On mm-hmm. either the handheld device or on the computer history or something like that. Immediately, to me, I think I go, trust. There's an immediate trust issue,
absolutely.
Right?
I think the first thing that hits you is the flood of emotion.
Okay.
Right? I mean, when you find
betrayal.
Out.
I would say the single most common emotion is betrayal.
Betrayal. Abuse of trust.
Yeah.
And all of the emotions that come with that, whether it be anger, sadness, frustration, confusion. There's just a lot of emotion that can come. And when you learn about the science of the brain, you learn that when your emotional brain kicks into gear, your logical brain shuts down.
Yes.
So your ability to have a rational conversation in an emotional state is physiologically impossible. So I feel like that's important to point out, is that your initial reaction may not be the state of mind that you're in may not be the ideal state of mind to have a conversation about whatever it is you just discovered.
Well, it's a panic. It's a bit of a crisis.
Yeah.
Because for many, that betrayal feels like there's infidelity.
Right.
And what does this mean?
Like, if there's this thing, what else is there that I don't know about?
Absolutely. And so there is, I see for many people, it's the crisis point. What do we do? Where do I turn? How do I get help? How do we talk about this? What does this mean?
What else is he hiding from me? What else is he, I don't know.
Or she.
But you're not the person I thought you were. You're not who I married. This isn't what I signed on for.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, too, because then my mind, I think, immediately goes to, well, let's see if this person will admit to this thing. So I start laying the snares and traps to be like, so... seen anything online recently that you want to talk about? I mean, that to me, as I kind of work through this in my mind, I think I'd be like, all right, maybe I'll give some points if they're honest about it, right?
Oh, so like you've already caught them, and so I'm going to approach it
right?
this way.
Yeah. Okay, like I find it in the history online, and I go, all right, points if they're honest about it. You've been looking at anything?
Right.
Do you think... I feel like that would be sort of a natural approach to it.
Let me see if I can set you up even further.
Right.
Like, yeah. I know. Let's see how, if I can
catch you. Let's see if you're
going
to lie to me about it.
Exactly.
So then you've got the betrayal of trust and lie, and then quickly you're able to take this thing and implode everything in your relationship.
And it quickly identifies as who is the good guy and who is the bad guy, and
right.
who is the one that's the problem and who is the victim.
Right.
And that's also a common dynamic. When a lot of couples first hear me talking about this, it can sound like I'm invalidating their pain when, no, I get it. It's more suddenly it's, you have a porn problem, go get into therapy, go get treatment, and then we can resume our marriage.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, this is happening over here instead of it being, this is something that's in our marriage that we need to talk about. And it's here. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. I feel like we've really well illustrated what not to do.
Right.
Right? So my hope in the next little bit that we have, Kristen and also Nate here, is to be able to say, all right, because inevitably there will be people that are listening and you'll think, this is never going to happen to me. Not my spouse.
Do you know what the statistics are in the church? There was a really interesting study.
I would love to know the statistics within the church. And it was speaking about the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, correct?
So I will have to pull up when this study occurred.
Okay.
But it was a simple, they changed, instead of bishops saying, have you ever looked at pornography? They switched it to, when was the last time you looked at pornography?
Mm-hmm.
Now, a big thing with this is, how do we define pornography? That could be, that's a broad word. But
the ZCMI ad. Ah!
Just for the sake of this conversation, it jumped up to 85%. So if it's like, has my partner ever looked at porn? Probably yes.
Yeah.
So let's just approach it. Will show up in your marriage at some point.
Right. But I feel like looking at, like if the bishop asked me that, you know, hey, have you looked at porn? Well, sure. I've been on a computer and quickly went, oh my God, I don't know where this, right? But if he was asking, I'd be like, yeah, I have seen it. It can pop up and stuff like that. But I look at porn being defined as
like seeking it out.
I've sought it out for some sort of satisfaction.
Yeah. And what words are we able to say in this podcast and what words are we able to
not? We can say whatever we want.
Because the real issue there is, have you looked at porn and have you masturbated to it?
Right.
That's really the concern. Because if you looked at someone, you're like, you looked at porn and you didn't masturbate, okay, it's a little better. That lessens it. I think that masturbation key, that's where a lot of people feel there's a big betrayal of trust.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. So then let's keep coming back to this, because the question I think still remains is, you find out, you know that it's common, we know that it's, some would say rampant based on kind of the talks and things like that we hear in general conference and stuff. It's obviously an issue, but so then what? Like what, if I am spouse that finds that my partner is consuming pornography on some level, what do I do? Because as Nate pointed out, my initial reaction is going to be betrayal, hurt, right. You know, maybe I'll trap, maybe I'll do all these things, and then I'm gone, right? I'm not having a rational discussion. Right. I am so far gone that by the time the spouse comes home, I've already convicted the person, packed their bags, called the lawyer and, you know, filed the papers and all this stuff. So let's back it up. What do I do? How can I not ruin everything?
I think a huge reason why we have that reaction instinctually is because we have a lot of misinformation about what pornography is. And there's been a huge influx in the way that we talk about porn. And there's a lot, it's associated a lot with the word addiction. And there's a lot of fear around the word addiction as well. And so there's,
because it's not having control, right?
Right. So when we find our partner looking at porn, the instinct is to freak out about not necessarily understanding what it is that they're looking at and not understanding how grave the situation is. And that instills a lot of fear. And I think the first thing that needs to happen is what we can do during this podcast is kind of clear up some of the confusion around what pornography is, why it's associated with addiction, and then also like how to get curious about it and have a conversation that isn't emotional and reactive and instead is more productive and, filled more with compassion and Christ-like love and understanding that can be more nurturing than anything.
So to piggyback on Nate, the what do you do?
Right.
Oftentimes with my clients or couples responding in a moment of crisis or emotional reactivity is not the time to decide. Anytime. If people want to make life decisions such as divorce or I'm going to do this and this, again, that crisis point, you may need to increase support. You may need I have had plenty of people that then they'll turn right to Google, look up things, places that they can go get help. Yes, that can be helpful. No, it can't. Sharing it with everybody and anybody, probably not a great idea either. Like
jumping on Facebook,
being
like,
super,
I just caught my spouse looking at like that.
I think there's some people that are safe that are going to be non-judgmental, because for a lot of people, because this has affected people everywhere, I may not want to call my mom if I want some preservation of my marriage to work this out and through it. She may not be the identified person that I should share that first. Hey, guess what? I feel really overwhelmed by this. Jennifer Finlayson Fife, I feel like, does a really good job of the managing emotional reactivity of you're feeling a flood of emotions. How do you manage that and self-soothe so you don't just go after that person and react? That's kind of the first thing is just acknowledging what you're feeling and validating that it's okay, that this is overwhelming, unexpected. I feel a ton of things. And hopefully at that moment, you either have a best friend or a few people you trust that you could turn to.
People, I like to think of that as people who are advocates of your relationship and not just advocates of making you feel better.
Yeah.
I feel like sometimes we go to people who will validate us and sure. make us feel like we're in the right and the other person's in the wrong and almost increase the victimization mentality, as opposed to like thinking about who are the people who are going to really, I like to think that who's going to be the type of person who's an advocate for love and for the relationship and who's going to maybe tell me things that are hard to hear but are best for me.
Or just someone that can listen in that moment.
Yes.
And not respond at all. Just but, listen.
But I want to throw this out there because I feel like in these kind of realms or specifically this, I think that there are a lot of people that would be like, oh my gosh, I don't want to tell anybody about this.
Yeah, that too.
Right?
That's too.
What gives porn its power.
Because there can also be that shame piece on both sides.
Right?
Shame for the person looking at porn, shame for the person who finds it of, oh no, what does this mean about me? What does this mean about a relationship? All those things as well. And that's just as important to self-soothe that shame. Brené Brown, the queen of shame work. That is important. I guess the key is, I think these things are messy. So what we're talking about is the ideal scenario in which to respond.
Sure.
Right?
I mean, yeah, we're obviously not going to nail it. It's so individual because every situation is so different.
And there's a lot of relationships where it gets handled really messy and they're really resilient. And you find it, you confront your partner, and you get through it.
Right.
But in the best of circumstances, you're able to manage even taking a night or a breath where you can approach it and say, hey, I found something, not sure about what this is, what this means, or why. That's in the best of circumstances. And that person responding and going, all right, let's talk. That's like the most ideal.
Right. But more
right.
But more than likely it will be the, I found this. I can't believe. No, you didn't. Why are you looking at my passwords? Why have you been
exactly.
on my phone?
Exactly. And that is where getting some resources, but these can be tricky waters to navigate, because if you hop on Google and you're like, I just found porn, now what? You're going to have a lot of sex addiction treatment centers telling you absolutely your partner's an addict. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. They need treatment. It's really expensive. You now need to get into treatment, and this is a part of your life forevermore. Hmm. It's kind of like I tell moms when they have a symptom in pregnancy that they're not sure about, don't go to Google, because you can find the worst
case. It always ends up cancer.
And you can find people whose lives have been destroyed by porn. And so you want to also be choosy on the resources that you're allowing into your life to navigate this, because it's as often as you have people with letters behind their name, mm-hmm. you have to do your due diligence on who are you letting in as a quote unquote professional to advise your life and direct your relationship.
But your advice would be, okay, so because what I want to kind of would do is give at least some structure of perhaps a guideline, some things that people could kind of go. So you'd go, okay, who can I sort of flesh this out with?
Right.
Would that be the first?
I would say, who can I flesh this out with?
Right. Mm-hmm. Who will give it the privacy and
respect?
And
your partner may be the person you can, but who will give the privacy and the respect and not judge my partner? That could go, I like your partner, and okay, so this is a part of your relationship. Every marriage has their things.
Right.
You want to find those people that they don't demonize your partner and that they don't have their own stuff going on, that they've been ruined by porn, that they're mm-hmm. like, get out now.
Yeah. You wouldn't believe I was you 5 years ago.
It's what Nate says. You want someone that's advocating for the betterment of the relationship and understands relationships are really hard and complex, and they are not judging it. They're not necessarily solving it, but can listen and help you get to hopefully the next phase of, I'm calm enough to go, what's my next step now? Mm-hmm. What do we do next? Because really, all you can do is do one step at a time. Like, okay, I found the porn. Best thing right now is to get myself to a little bit less of emotional reactivity. Then I'll figure out my next step. Okay, I've talked to a friend. What's my next step?
And I feel like the next thing pretty quick is to talk to the partner, right?
Yeah.
If the partner isn't the person who you trust as far as the relationship goes, I think it quickly has to be the partner, because
absolutely.
You could be. It is my, what do we call it, flaw to go to the most extreme thing,
yes.
You know,
stories
be looking at this every single day and you must find me so unattractive and all these things, right? And
horribilizing.
It's just like, oh my gosh.
Yeah.
When in reality, yeah, it could be like, oh yeah, you were gone. And I looked at that one time. Sorry, I won't look at that.
And again, what's interesting, Nate and I were talking about this before, is a common thing I ask couples, again, do you know what type of porn they were looking at? And they're like, no, I don't want to know. Because oftentimes people go to the worst case scenario and they dream up a lot of things they picked up on news bites or media, and they have this idea of what they think porn is.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go so far over that once they do dare to ask their partner what they were looking at, they're like, oh. I mean, really,
so
oftentimes, yeah, they're like, that's actually a lot better than I thought. Does it take it all away? No. But just finding that out, because really what you're starting to have to do is learn how to discuss sexuality in a much more honest way in your relationship.
Yeah.
That's really what you're beginning to do, is how do we talk about this when we've never been taught how to talk about sex or these really hard things.
I want to take a break for a second. And when I come back, I want to talk about how you prep for that conversation, because you know that that partner is going to be defensive. Maybe not 100%, mm-hmm, but I
absolutely
would think that they're probably, if there are things that you can do to limit or to minimize the defensiveness.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that when we come back in the second block of the Cultural Hall.
Running a small business today can be difficult enough. Imagine all the work you have to do to market it. Imagine the hours you put in to create promotional materials for it. Now, imagine a partner that can help you with all of that and more. Imagine Lennon Design. Lennon Design is your partner in business when you need a professional look at a price you can afford. Whether it's websites, advertising media, promotional materials, and more, Lennon Design can help you promote your business. When you need creative, affordable designs, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
Utah's newest upscale catering company is now accepting bookings for the upcoming holiday and wedding season. Slick Rock Catering masterfully combines exquisite food, beautiful presentation, high-level service, and careful attention to create a special occasion that will be remembered. From award-winning food, event planning, decorating, to providing highly trained servers, Slick Rock Catering will help you make your next special event a huge success. Contact them at slickrockcatering.com.
Time for the second block of the Cultural Hall. So here we are with soon-to-be doctor. Let's throw that out there.
Sure.
Kristen Hodson. And soon-to-be MA?
Sure.
Nate Bagley.
No, MFT.
Emma, you're going for the marriage and family therapy.
That's the hope.
MFT.
There it is.
Yeah.
Look at you guys bettering yourself. You know what
trying
I am? BS.
Awesome.
BS. Oh.
Bachelor of Science. Both literal bachelor and scientist.
Sciency.
Yeah. It should be chemistry, though, because...
Oh, my gosh.
Of my love. I got nothing. Let's talk about
how... I saw where you were going with that, though.
Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, I know. Thank
I
you.
Like the direction.
See? Love you, mentoring. Nate, right there.
Right there.
How do we minimize the confrontation?
So let's start again with what not to do.
Okay.
Probably it depends on what kind of outcome you want from the conversation.
Like, I
want
to save my marriage, right?
If you want any type of engagement back.
Right. Like, I want to know what is going on from the other person.
I want to know what's going on, even though this is, I'm angry, I'm extraordinarily uncomfortable. Probably approaching it from a, you did this, I can't believe you, you've completely done X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
May not solicit what you're really
hoping. We probably
hoping
need to not be so kind. Don't do that.
So,
right?
Yeah, because the only, let's talk about why that doesn't work, because it leaves the person who's being attacked, or the person who's being confronted, I guess, is probably the better word to use, with zero options. They can either plead guilty and be guilty and just sit there and feel horrible and mm-hmm. shame, full of shame and really bad, and you can't really fix it. Or they can deny it and lie even more and dig themselves a deeper hole. So the only real direction to go when you confront somebody like that is down. Mm-hmm. It's not going to repair anything. It's not going to restore anything. It's not going to build any closeness or love or unity or forgiveness.
Well, it doesn't actually solve what most people are wondering, which are all the different whys.
Right.
Why did you do this? Why didn't you tell me? Why is this happening? And so if you can approach it from, it's the cliche, but it is true. It's the tried and true, taking ownership of how you feel and speaking from the place of I.
Okay.
and even saying, you can claim both. I am really angry and confused and hurt, and I really want to understand you. Both things can exist. You don't have to minimize your pain to get understanding. That's going to solicit the best response in a really hard situation.
So is it as basic as, I know you hear the you statements and the I statements, is it right? Really just as simple as going, anytime you have the temptation to be like, you go, wait, I...
But look what you did. There was a pause. You said I was going to go for you, and then you go, wait. So you pause for a minute.
Uh-huh.
I watched you get a little bit more grounded in where you're coming from and shift to the I. You automatically, if you're approaching it from an I position versus you, you already put yourself back in your seat just enough. And you are calming yourself just enough that one switch. Mm-hmm. And it may be that you have to do this in bite-sized pieces.
Can't do
the whole conversation at once. It may be, I actually don't want to hear anything you have to say right now. I just need you to know I found porn. And we'll come back to this. It really can be that. I'm not in a position. I'm so angry that if I talk to you right now, all I'm going to do is attack you. So give me a minute. I mean, there can be a variety of things if you take ownership over your emotions. Because what I'm not expecting for people to do is go, I found porn. Okay.
I
feel
right.
That's probably not going to happen.
The way that you handle this needs to be contrary to your natural instincts.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the mysteries of love, of romantic love, is that to have a great relationship, you have to do a lot of things that go counter intuition, against your intuition.
Of what would feel good. I want to fuel my anger. I want to fuel my frustration, and I'm justified to do so.
When we look at, if we can go into the research a little bit, like the Gottman Institute research, they say that one of the greatest predictors of success in a marriage is how you handle your conflict. If you can't handle conflict well, your relationship is more likely than not bound to not last.
Hmm.
And he talks, John and Julie Gottman talk a little bit about the four horsemen of the apocalypse, which are defensiveness, criticism, contempt, and stonewalling, which are very emotional reactions to conflict.
Mm-hmm.
Defensiveness, like denying your own responsibility, contempt and criticism are attacking the other person for the things that they do wrong or their character, and stonewalling is completely emotionally shutting down.
And so let me be a devil's advocate.
Go ahead.
What if I don't handle it well? Because there is research that the Gottmans also talk about. Is, say you handle it horribly. You find the porn and you're just...
I love that you called it the porn.
The porns.
Let you find the porns. But you find it and you do react. Mm-hmm. The other piece to this is you have the opportunity to then repair.
Yeah.
And repairing is huge. Okay, I screwed up. I don't love the way I handled that. I'm really sorry I attacked you. I do want to understand. That repair is also important. So for those of you that are like, oh, great, I found porn yesterday, and now you release this today.
Yeah, great. I already yelled at him
or her
last night. Where was this episode? Come on.
Right. That repair
attempt.
Opportunity.
So just like you want to keep yourself out of that emotional state, you want to approach the conversation in a way that keeps your partner out of that emotional state. Because if either one of you reaches that compromised emotional state, the conversation basically ceases being productive. So the way that you approach it, like Kristen was saying, is, what can you do to make your partner feel safe to talk to you without fear of punishment?
And it is rooted in empathy. Empathy is like, it's that curiosity of why are you looking at porn? Yeah. There's two different ways I can phrase that. Why are you looking at porn? Or really, why are you looking at porn? What is this about for you? And if you really want to know the question, they might feel safe enough to like, do you really want to know? Well, here's why. And then you really can get somewhere, but you may not be ready to really hear why. Yet.
Right.
Coming from a man's perspective, if you have a husband,
or a wife,
but in this particular instance, if you have a husband somebody who's hiding their porn habits from you, there's a reason they're hiding from it. And it's probably because they're embarrassed or ashamed or they feel guilty about it.
I think important to point out, Kristen's young married attitude is, I think, prevalent within the church as well. If my spouse finds out that I'm doing
screwed.
This, I am screwed.
Absolutely.
To the point that it could be divorce. So, of course, I'm going to hide that thing. I love her. Just because I look at this doesn't mean I don't love her.
But we don't know how to talk about it.
Right.
And I will say, to go back to, it's a reality of church culture. It's not a criticism. It's, we are taught to hide our sexuality in our adolescence, that really there's not a safe space to understand our sexuality. So it is split off, and we learn early on, I have to manage my sexuality in a completely separate space from relationships. And I think that's important to remember, that none of us have really been taught how to own our sexuality, let alone with ourselves, or with ourselves, let alone with our partner.
Yeah, I rent my sexuality. I don't own it. Yeah. I just make a little money on the side.
Yeah.
Sorry. Cheap joke. So go back. What are some questions? How can I navigate that conversation? Be real, because I feel like this would be such a difficult thing that people wouldn't even know the questions to ask.
Well, what about the first thing of saying, if someone approached me and said, look, there's a few things before I talk to you about something. I need you to know I love you and this marriage matters to me. If I know that right out of the gate, I'd be like, okay, I'm still going to be like, what's coming down the pipeline?
Yeah, right. And or but, what's the next thing
exactly.
Right now?
Exactly. But I can be like, and you're just helping them calm that like dun, dun, dun. But then starting there, if it is, I found porn. I don't know what to say to you about this. You can own that. You don't have to become an expert on what to say, but really just saying, I found porn and I'm confused. I'm confused and I hurt. I really don't know what. It may be that simple thing, and the person goes, okay. And then it may be, can you help me understand? Can you help me understand why? Is this a reflection of me? What does this mean? How often? Like, those can be questions that I actually have couples before they ask all of those, to make sure they really want to know. Because some information's helpful, some's not. So that slowing the process down can actually be helpful in the long run.
So would your recommendation then be,
it might be sticking with emotions.
What's that?
Might just be sticking with emotions for a little bit.
Yeah, so maybe not getting into sort of the nitty gritty of it, but just being like, hey, I want you to know that this is what I found and this hurts me and I would like to go speak with someone else with you because I don't know how to navigate this.
Yes.
I mean, is that a place you go? Or
absolutely,
do you...
that can be. The only thing though that, again, so I guess they should also know I'm a certified sex therapist. Mm-hmm. I'm not a certified sex addiction therapist. There's a difference. Mm-hmm. For the sake of this podcast, I don't want to get into the messiness of that. But I would potentially say, be mindful of if the first route you go into is a sex addiction treatment center, it's going to, the issues are going to be narrowly looked at.
I don't mean sex addiction. I just mean, I think that my inclination would be, okay, I am sort of hurt by this and I need you to know this and I care about you. And I don't want to mess this up. So I've got a friend, and if you're cool, we're going to go and kind of figure this out. I think that would be my inclination. What are other, I mean, we've talked about some of the questions that people could ask. I think a very important thing, and in every relationship that I've ever been engaged in, I always will say, please do not ask me questions that you do not want the answer to.
Yes.
Because I will tell you honestly the answer.
Yes.
And sometimes those are going to be answers that you don't want to hear.
And that, I think, is wise. I do think that's wise. Sometimes once I ask people, like, why do you really want to know? Because when people get the answer, it often doesn't produce the feeling or the security that they hoped. And so really getting clear on, why am I asking this? What do I hope to get from it? Because the anxiety...
I need fuel for my fire so that I can say, you did it this many times?
But the anxiety can go up in one way when we feel really disoriented, as we want to just keep asking the questions and asking and asking, and our minds can get consumed.
Mm-hmm.
And so if that's also the place, getting into someone that can help you, a counselor, there's some really great books that can help understand what this can look like too and what's going on.
So we share from a place of love, and then we share kind of how we feel.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Something that came to mind, there's a great model that I like to use when having difficult conversations that are fraught with emotion. And it just requires you to set up some rules before you actually have the conversation. And it goes like this. one person will talk and the other person will not make commentary on what the other person says, but just repeat back what the first person said.
Okay.
So it's a way to mitigate, it's a way to increase empathy and mitigate misunderstanding, because one of the quickest things that can lead to more outfall is when we make assumptions about what our partner is saying in an emotional conversation.
So
like
a
this.
Restatement of what you're saying.
Exactly. So
you see how I did that?
You restate
and
what they're saying.
I restated
yeah.
what he said.
And so the way that you set it up is like the first person will say their piece and then the second person will repeat back and say, did I get it? And you can say yes or no. And if you say no, the person tries again. And then they finish with, is there anything else? And if there's something else, the person gets to go again and like get all of the emotion and questions and everything out until they feel completely like sometimes you just need to get all that stuff out without having a conversation. You just need to feel understood. And I think that can be a good model to help keep the conversation from spinning out of control,
yeah.
which often happens.
So that is in the place of the internet. That's an Imago technique.
That's an Imago technique.
That is I-M-A-G-O. They have a ton of Imago scripts that can be really helpful. If you're like, I have no idea how to just...
Because I think that's most people, right?
Yeah, they're like, I have no idea how to lead this conversation.
Whoa.
I wasn't going to go there.
I have no friggin' idea.
Having a script or a guide can be helpful.
Right.
Something just to follow. It's that container. And to not have it derail.
Just as an aside, is a tremendous advice for everything beyond porn too, right?
Yeah.
Like any sort of...
Like communication.
Like discussion. Yeah, just communication in general, I think, yes. is a valuable thing. You speak. I hear you. Are you saying this? Yes,
most
I'm
people want to be understood first. They want to know that they're yep. being heard if they then want to hear the other person.
Yeah.
If you're not hearing me, I don't really care what you're going to say back to me. And that's one thing I also tell people, own. If you are not in a position where you really want to engage in dialogue and all you want to do is vent, it's really helpful to the other person if they're like, I don't want you to fix it. I don't want you to respond. I actually don't want to understand where you yeah. are at all. I just need to vent because I'm really frustrated. And they're like, that's really helpful to know yeah. that all you want to do is vent.
Right.
But that, again, has you slowing yourself down to be like, what do I want from this conversation? I don't want you to respond. Okay, great. I know that. I'm going to tell that to you. It gets my needs met, lets you know. Or if you do, I want to have a conversation where I can understand. I would really like that. And here's an Imago. Like, we can try it this way. All those different things. These are just different techniques.
Give me another example of how you could have good communication. You're sharing that Imago. Huh. See how I picked that up?
Yeah.
As I understand, you shared an Imago with us.
Well, and this one, the other thing is just the basic principles of differentiation, which is soothing your own reactivity.
Which means what?
Which means
you just got glossy-eyed for me. Sorry.
I want to rip your face off right okay. now, or I am really anxious. It's my job to be able to calm myself down. That's mm-hmm. my job. It's not your job. It's my job.
You're responsible for your emotions.
Mm-hmm. So that I can then communicate. If I am getting too up there, like I'm getting too angry, then I need to be responsible for leaving the conversation and then saying, I'm going to leave this conversation right now.
Mm-hmm.
Let's return in an hour.
Yeah, leaving That's in an appropriate way, not storming out.
And also not just leaving it open-ended
right.
so that the person has no idea. Like, are we ever going to talk about this again? What is this going to be? I'll come back in an hour. Again, if anger is a common emotion that's going to come with this,
mm-hmm.
don't expect to tackle it perfectly and give yourself and your partner breathing room for the sake of your relationship to take a breath.
Yeah,
I have couples where they'll go out and they'll go on a walk while they talk about it because they're not just sitting there staring at each other. Whatever your arguing pattern is, if you know that if I approach him right when he comes in from work, and that's probably not a good idea.
Right.
If we always get in fights, if I start it in this way, like Nate was saying, if I always just start with, well, you know what? Try not doing that.
Right.
And
do it in public so that people can... I'm just joking.
Yeah.
No, but there's a lot of little things that can make a big difference. Like going for a walk is a great one because exercise releases endorphins. Endorphins are natural painkillers and your brain can't tell the difference between physical and emotional pain. So sometimes going for a walk and talking about something hard will help numb the pain and keep you level-headed. Or physical contact is another one. It may work for some people, may not, but holding hands and looking into each other's eyes while you have a hard
huge
conversation.
Huge thing for me.
Yeah.
That could really help you stay grounded and stay focused in... this is about the relationship and it's not about me versus him or her versus me.
Yeah. In fact, in a lot of times I'll be just like, just hug me and let's talk about this. Right. And it's like, this is uncomfortable. And it's like, I know we're hugging, but this,
I know
this is happening.
It is a huge thing for me to just be like, listen, it's a closeness you can't get away, and we know we're going to figure this out before this thing does. It's weird. It's weird for people.
But let me say, you know, we're talking a lot about the person approaching it, but the person on the other end. Mm-hmm. Let's say you are the one listening, and at some point, or historical or otherwise, you have been caught.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to also get defensive.
Yeah.
It's also easy to justify and be like, well, I only did this because this, this, this. The best place, again, that you can approach that conversation back is to connect with their emotion. That must be really scary for you.
And
you
I'm
must
really
feel
scared.
Really hurt. You must feel very betrayed or feel betrayed. Those things right there will lean into your relationship and foster connection versus, again, turning away and looking at that person and going, you shouldn't have looked at my passwords.
Right.
You've done this, 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 and all those justifications. That person wants to just feel validated in how they feel. So that other person that's on the receiving end can also take some responsibility in making the conversation go better, too.
I want to take another break for a second, and I want to address this in kind of the third break. Is there a responsibility of the partner that you talk about it as a justification, right? Are there things that partners do that cause people to look at porn?
Okay.
So we'll talk about that in the third block here of the Cultural Hall.
Hi, this is Dan the Laptop Man from PC Laptops. You know what? PC Laptops, we can fix your broken screen on your iPhone, iPad, or Android device. We can fix most phones in less than 15 minutes. Not days or even hours, but in most cases, 15 minutes or less. How awesome is that? 15 minutes or less? That's right. Here's how it works. Bring in your broken iPhone, iPad, or Android device. We'll fix your phone while you enjoy a refreshing, complimentary beverage and snack, in most cases, in under 15 minutes. It's easy and painless. Bring your broken phones and iPads into any one of our 8 locations right now, or call us at 1-877-596-SAVE, or check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com, where we can fix your broken screen on your phones and tablets in less than 15 minutes. So visit us right now at PCLaptops.com.
All right, so is it a wife or husband's fault? Let's just go for it.
Oh, you just want to jump right there. I think that is oftentimes what we think. The
right?
antidotes
we had
are,
sex more, I wouldn't be looking at it.
If I was more desirable, then...
Right, that's where... I feel like that's a huge thing that women take on. Well, maybe I'm not attractive enough, or I've put the baby weight, or these things, right?
Right.
And I obviously drove him to looking at porn.
Right, and that can be one of the traps.
Or her.
Is, that can be one of the traps of... I just need to have more sex. And then suddenly you become responsible for
somebody else's choices.
For someone else's choices. So go into the conversation of what you said.
So David Lay.
Who's that? I have no idea who that is.
David Lay is a therapist who specializes in studying pornography.
He wrote a book called The Myth of Sex Addiction.
Okay.
And I talk about this often that, again, going back to 26-year-old Kristen, who was porn is a deal breaker for me. It came into my life and my marriage. Of course it would, because I put those things down.
Sure.
And
I'll never do this. And God's like,
right, exactly.
See.
So through my journey, I was confused and, got David Lay's book, The Myth of Sex Addiction. And then Patrick Carnes, a really popular Out of the Shadows. He is for sex addiction, and read those simultaneously and had kind of a conversation. And it really changed a lot of things for me. So David Lay was really foundational in helping me shift and think differently around what porn could mean beyond just addiction.
Okay, so he did that, but what? What did it change?
It helped me. So the second I actually looked at my husband and said, you're not a sex addict. He's like, I know. And we kind of looked at each other like, so then what?
Yeah.
And that was actually the best part of our journey, because then we became extremely curious about what this was about. Was it unexpressed sexual desires? Was this something that we just hadn't talked about and negotiated? Or was it a symptom of something else that hadn't been addressed. And through our journey, it was a symptom of other things that weren't addressed. And once we started tackling those, the porn actually started to go away. It became a topic that we could then talk about. We became on the same team. And he had to then become more responsible about his choices and accountability to everything. That's one thing David Lay talks a lot about, is if we move right to addiction, people then become less accountable to their choices. Sometimes they're just making bad choices.
Right.
Sometimes it's just that. Other times what they find is it's a symptom of an unaddressed mental health issue, an unaddressed historical trauma, that you have all these other things that can be presenting and the porn is the symptom. Mm. So if you fight and battle and wrestle with the porn, you're actually missing the deeper stuff that can change what's happening with pornography.
And it goes beyond even that stuff. Like that's one of the things that I love about his David Lay.
Okay.
He talks a lot about, you know, there are so many different reasons for somebody to look at porn.
So many.
Like, you could be looking at porn because you're depressed. You could be lonely. You could be anxious. It could be you want to explore a fantasy without judgment. It could be that, like all the things that Christian just listed, and then beyond. And it's really easy to, like we started off the conversation talking about how it's easy to take the blame on yourself and say, I'm just not having enough sex, or I'm not attractive enough. Mm-hmm. I think it does an injustice when we're not willing to get curious and ask the question, you know, what's the root cause here? Like a lot of men will turn to porn because they don't have an emotional support system. Like, say a man loses a job or goes through a divorce. It's really common for a man to turn to porn to kind of self-medicate emotionally through that process. There's just a lot of reasons to look at porn, and jumping to the conclusion that it's because your boobs aren't big enough or because, you know, you put on some baby weight. Like that's giving too simple of a solution to a complex, potentially complex problem.
And if you sit in front of a bunch of men, they're often like, that's not it at all.
Yeah.
That it's not just sexuality is far more complex and nuanced than that. Of if you're looking there, you must not want this. Not often the case. And the thing where Mormons can be a bit more vulnerable is we can self-identify as a sex addict quicker because of the shame we feel around it. So it's not uncommon for me to have someone come into my office, identify as a porn addict. I ask, how often are you looking and what's this like? What are you looking at? I look at porn 4 times a year. I can't stop. I feel really guilty. I could lose my marriage. These are all the criteria. The reality is they haven't, again, had it. They've never even been in a room where they can talk about sexuality. Hmm. We are having sex long before we've even learned how to talk about it. So we oftentimes get married, we're having sex, and we still don't know how to talk about it.
Right.
I don't like it when you do this. Please do more of that. Those are really hard things to say.
Shh.
So more likely than not.
Be quiet. What are you talking about?
I know.
Shh. Keep that quiet. I do want to go there for a second.
Okay.
Because I think that this plays into this maybe a little bit. So let's take a jaunt away from this porn and what's next, but healthy conversations with our partner just about sex, right?
Ooh.
Important. That's probably a whole different episode,
but it does tie into this because, again, finding porn can be the cracking open of learning how to talk about sexuality. Sadly, that's oftentimes what cracks it open, where couples go, we actually have to talk about this. We actually have to deal with it. We have to negotiate things that are hard and that we don't even know where to start. That's hard.
You know what? I think let's actually couch it. I would like to just have a whole episode and have you guys back and we'll just be like, all right, so we're going to talk about sex in our relationships.
And
right?
I think that would be a good one for Alicia to come back.
Yes, please.
Definitely.
Yes, that's your
sister. She would be awesome. A great one. She's the other sex girl.
And be able to just talk about, because it is a thing, right? Because in dating, right? If I go out on a date with a Mormon girl, now that I'm single, and I go, hey, tell me what you think about sexuality as far as in marriage goes. I'm not going on a date with that girl again. Not guaranteed,
no.
But probably not.
And really, what is she going to be able to know about sexuality growing up Mormon where, again, and this may just sound awful, but most oftentimes women we are taught to be desirable, not have desire. So really, what do I want? I have no idea, because when I get to marriage, you'll tell me what it is we do and don't do and what my body does like and doesn't, because I don't really know my body.
There's a shadowy side to that, too, of you'll tell me what I like and don't like. And that's the fact that we all have desires and fantasies. And porn, just this bringing it back to the conversation, porn sometimes makes you confront your partner and understand what their fantasies are. And that can be a scary thing.
Well, because if you tell me your fantasy, I then feel the pressure that I have to fulfill it.
Right.
And sometimes fantasies are best left in the fantasy realm. Let's not act it out.
So discussion for another time. We'll get your sister to come back and do that. But hold me accountable as far as doing that.
I will.
The sex chat with your partner.
Yes.
Episode here at the Cultural Hall. So.
Yes.
Not your spouse's fault, right? We can safely say that as far as porn goes.
Right.
So it's probably an easier said than done concept.
Absolutely, because it can take a hit on if you already questioned or already have a shaky self-esteem or sense of self, or if you already worry if you aren't pretty enough or X, Y, and Z, that enters into it and it can shatter everything. Mm. It can really exacerbate that. So that can be one place, and that's where needs support around that, and rightfully so. Again, there can be that betrayal piece, but most often, if you allow room for curiosity, there's typically something else going on, whether it is something like in the mental health, or there's a reason, or this is actually something that is a part of my sexuality that I really value, and I don't know how to share that with you or negotiate that with you. I don't know. It can even be that. Because the way we talk about it is there's no room for porn ever, positive ever, none.
Right.
So there's got to be something bad, and that's not always the case.
Some may disagree with you at that point. Obviously.
Absolutely.
In the last waning moments of this, I do want to talk about this, because there is, or is there, sexual addiction or porn addiction, and how do I know that?
That's a whole different conversation.
So let me go here then. How with my partner, how would I know that it's to a point that I need to be worried, right? I'm understanding, but is it frequency? Is it...
That's a great question.
Is it the cost, financial cost? Although with it being so free and available on the internet, I don't know why you would pay for it, but whatever. You know what I'm saying? Is it the destruction? Is it the absence of love and connectivity between us? At what point do I go, this is so far beyond me. I've shared that we're upset. We want to salvage the marriage.
Yeah.
What I mean,
you just did a great job of listing all the reasons as to why
I should be a therapist.
All of those things, if it's disrupting our connection, if it's impeding work, and a lot of people will say, I feel out of control. Uh-huh. Those can all be things of this is it's again, not to make it a non-issue, it's approaching it from
if they're dabbling in something illegal.
Well, yes.
Also.
Yes. Yes.
Like, that's a hard and fast rule, right?
Yes.
Like,
just throwing it out there. Like, absolutely. That's something to be aware of.
Absolutely.
Infidelitis probably is another good one, too.
And there's a really great book called The Monogamy Agreement. Mm, very rarely do we go into a marriage and negotiate. We just kind of assume we both understand what it means to be monogamous and faithful.
Mm-hmm.
So if I catch you texting another woman that's a coworker for lunch... And I was like, you don't do that. That's part of being monogamous. You're like, oh, I didn't realize that. I thought I could have girlfriends.
Right.
Starting to break down what does it mean for us to be faithful to each other and really connect in a meaningful way. Those things are good. The Monogamy Agreement by Tammy Nelson helps guide that conversation. It also guides how do we repair when I feel like I've just, when my partner's just been unfaithful.
Mm-hmm.
Really good resource. But, where were we? just got lost in
as far
thoughts.
As, you know, taking it to that step to the, we, this is, depth of seriousness, I guess.
Yes, yes, yes. Thank you. And so if it is, if
because I don't want to overreact.
No.
But I do not want to underreact either.
True.
And there's a place of harm reduction. If it's, if you're going to lose your job, that's a problem. If you're right. looking at pornography on public computers in the library, you are going to get fired. That's a problem. If you're going into debt and your finances are out of control, that's a problem. If you are turning away from your partner and avoiding various things and turning to porn, worth looking at. Like, mm-hmm. what's that about for me? Those can all be symptoms. If the relationship is suffering and porn is involved, it may not be that porn's the problem, but it is the symptom. It can be the outlet that is covering up all these other things that are needing to be addressed in a marriage.
And which is a great opportunity. You talk about porn and then you get to address those things about your marriage, and then your marriage can improve.
It can.
Yeah, because you put some effort into your marriage.
Yes.
It's going to get better. Or it could end,
or
which
it could
might
end.
Be better.
Right.
It could end. Absolutely.
But statistically speaking, I would say, you can correct me if I'm wrong, the majority of people who are looking at porn on a regular basis would not be considered addicts.
Correct.
A very small percentage would be considered an actual.
Let's go to a Mormon
addict.
Resource. It's okay. My most favorite Mormon resource there is, because Elder Oaks actually
yes,
put porn
I
use on a
article.
Spectrum. October 2015 conference edition, the Recovering from the Trap of Pornography. It is there that he puts pornography use on a spectrum and says very few people at this end are going to. He uses actually the word compulsive behavior, and then has this parenthesis. So even he switches the language around it.
Which is so mm-hmm. good.
And I feel like that's really helpful and hopeful for people to look at pornography on a more nuanced spectrum instead of addict or not, or frequency of use, or, yeah, I'm seeking this out quite a bit. This isn't helping my marriage. It's not helping my life. What I have people go with, I don't feel healthy around my sexuality. The goal is to develop healthy sexuality with ourself and healthy sexuality within our relationship. That's the goal. So if these different things are making you not feel healthy, or this concept of sexual integrity of I'm acting out of line with my morals and values, how do I get these to match up where my behaviors and my morals and values line up? I will feel like a healthier person if those things are in line.
And this isn't a simple thing to navigate. So be generous with yourself and with your partner, and give yourself some time and some, be patient with yourself. Allow yourself to like explore this and try and figure it out, because navigating your sexuality, especially if you've grown up in a very conservative culture like ours, and it's been something that's separate from you, or that you've had a lot of shame around, it can take a while to work through that stuff. So be patient and
very
kind
patient.
And loving with each other.
Yeah.
Hopefully some of the stuff that we've shared within this episode is helpful to people. If they want to get in touch with you, again, give them the way that they can reach out to you.
So email me, Kristin, Kristin, @thehealinggroup.com. This may be a good episode that if you have specific questions that were partially answered or weren't answered or made you think of a new question, email me and we can put them on the cultural hall.
Great.
And further the conversation.
Great. And it'll be anonymous. Don't freak out. We're not going to be like Sandy out in. No, we're not going to.
We always do it anonymous, but you probably have a similar question that someone else may have, and it will be really helpful.
And then to get in touch with you, Nate.
LoveYouMentory@gmail.com.
Great way to get in touch with these folks and use them as a resource. Share this episode if there are others that you know that this affects them, or you think it might affect them or has affected them in the past. Definitely something that, as we've chatted, some things that I had never heard before, and things to definitely kind of take into consideration. And in some ways, you may think, you know what, this episode I just listened to of my favorite podcast ever, or show available in podcast form, I should say, this is never going to apply to me, and you may down the road find yourself in that situation. So
Right. Hopefully
that forethought of going, you know what, if I ever find myself in a situation like this, to just, even if we save you that stop thought and go, okay, I'm going to breathe. Hopefully this was of value to you. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, and that if you weren't healthy enough to listen this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen next week. And then when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.